This is Fresh Air. Rowan Atkinson is part of that breed of British comedian who got their start in the British university system. He followed in the footsteps of comic actors like Dudley Moore and Peter Cook in Beyond the Fringe, and John Cleese in Monty Python, who all made their debuts at university clubs and festivals. After college, Atkinson joined the BBC's Not the 9 o'clock News, which won him a British Academy Award, then followed a series of one-man shows in London. Rowan Atkinson is probably best known in this country for the Blackadder series, which was shown on PBS and A&E. The first installment of the series is set in medieval England. Atkinson plays a conniving brown noser who tries to suck up to the king and make a quick buck at the same time. Now Rowan Atkinson is back in the States with an HBO special, which will air during the month of March. When you see Atkinson perform, one of the most striking things about him is his hilariously malleable face. I asked him when he first discovered what his face was capable of doing.
Well, I can almost put a date on it, which was, it was the first year that I went to Oxford University in 1975 to study electrical engineering, of all things, because I'm an engineer by training, and that's true. And I went there in October 75 to start my degree, and I was absolutely fascinated by the whole, university thing and just all these, just the art and the culture and the organ recitals and the drama and the comedy and the sketch writing and the review and all these, masses of extracurricular activity which was going on, and I immersed myself in it quite quickly. And it was towards the end of my first term there that I was asked if I wanted to do a sketch in a show, in a review, variety sort of show that was being put on at the University Theatre. And I'd never written a sketch in my life. And I was just in front of the mirror and I started to pull faces, really, no more than that. And it seemed to me to be quite funny what I was seeing in the mirror. So I invented this sketch. It's just a kind of a mad sketch with this character who didn't say anything and just kind of burbled and squawked at the audience and tried to give them a small piece of paper dressed in pajamas. And that was the sketch, really, called Message. It became known as the Message Mime. And that was really, I can honestly say, that was the first time that I discovered the degree to which I could use my face.
Now, do you still work in front of a mirror to perfect what you're able to do with your face? And I do feel slightly handicapped by radio because...
Exactly. We can't display
we can't
much,
exactly
can
we? Describe what you do, but it literally goes in all directions. You have a way of pulling your lips either up in almost into your nose or fold them back into your ears.
You make me sound like some sort of zoo exhibit. but I know what you mean. You're absolutely right. No, I don't, actually. I can't remember the last time I practiced or rehearsed in front of a mirror. I think it was, 10 years ago. I mean, occasionally it's nice to speak when I'm doing more verbal characters, to speak in front of a mirror just to give yourself a picture. And sometimes that it does help you form your face, or form a character in a certain way and give him certain expressive features.
In your HBO Comedy Hour, you have a sketch called No One Called Jones, and I'm wondering whether you can describe that for us.
Well, I'm slightly embarrassed by the sketch, but it is undoubtedly amusing. It is funny. It's a schoolmaster doing a roll call.
All right, come on, settle down, please. Answer your names. Anus. Arse bandit. Bottom. Clitoris. Where are you, clitoris? Doo-doo. Enema. Fist up. Come on, grow up, please.
You went to British boarding school. What kind of experiences did you have there? What kind of a student were you in school?
I was an average student, academically speaking. Probably above average, actually, because I got a scholarship to my last school. But I was very distracted by the extracurricular activities, again, particularly theatre, you know, the school plays. I think I was quite rebellious. I wasn't really nasty or desperately evil or naughty, but I was just determined to live my own way. And I think as a result, I got the noses of a lot of the staff and everybody else. I was described as bloody-minded, I think.
And did you have certain schoolmasters that were trying to get you to behave or to get you to be a more serious, focused student?
Yes. I had a housemaster, kind of one down from the headmaster, with whom I didn't get on at all. He was quite young, actually. He was only about 30 when I was at school, although he seemed, of course, ancient, the way that school teachers do. And he and I just couldn't strike it off. In fact, his name was Martin, and our sessions of when he was always giving me a dressing down were known as Roan and Martin's Laughing. But they weren't remotely amusing at the time, I can tell you. So I was quite difficult in that sense, and I didn't get on with him. And the funny thing is, he died last year. At a very young age, you know, only about 48. But it's just that the attitude you have towards those in superiority at school that I've never felt more ambivalent about a death. You know, half you is thinking, well, it is genuinely sad that this man has died so young, and the other half you is thinking, well, God, I disliked you, and I still dislike you to this day. And although I don't, you know, wish you any harm in the afterlife, my attitude is very ambivalent.
No, we certainly have boarding schools in this country, but
yes.
How old were you when you went off to boarding school?
I was 9.
That seems awfully young.
Yeah, it is very young. I think it's far too young, really. And I was very homesick then, and I was very homesick later when I was 13 and went to my second school. It's far too young. It's a sort of madness. I mean, the educational system in Britain is changing, you know, rapidly, and has changed a tremendous amount even since I was at school, and it changed a tremendous amount in the 10 years prior to that. So now, you know, there are boarding schools and they've got high academic standards, but they're much kind of more sane, you know. There's a lot less vicious and dubious activity than there was either in my day and certainly than there was 20 years ago.
I'm speaking with British comedian Rowan Atkinson, and people in this country might know him because of the Blackadder series. He starred in that, was seen on public television and on arts and entertainment. And Rowan Atkinson has an HBO comedy special, which will air during the month of March. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm talking with British comedian Rowan Atkinson. Here's a clip from his BBC series, The Blackadder.
Well, Mrs. Miggins, at last we can return to sanity. The hustings are over, the bunting is down, the mad hysteria is at an end. After the chaos of a general election, we can return to normal.
Well, has there been a general election then, Mr. Blackadder?
Indeed there has, Mrs. Miggins.
Well, I never heard about it.
Well, of course you didn't. You're not eligible to vote.
Why not?
Because virtually no one is. Women, peasants, chimpanzees... Lunatics, lords...
That's not true. Lord Nelson's got a vote.
He's got a boat, Ballroom. Marvellous thing, democracy. Look at Manchester. Population 60,000, electoral roll 3.
Where did the idea of the Blackadder come from?
It came from myself and my co-writer, Richard Curtis. And we sat down in 1983, it was, in the wake of a successful TV show that we'd done in Britain called Not the 9 o'clock News, which was a sketch show. Indeed, I think you had a version of it here later
yes,
on called Not
did.
Necessarily the News.
Exactly.
But we did a version of it first between 1979 and 1982, and it became, you know, a genuine, sizable success in Great Britain. But we got bored with it after three, 4 years, and I was just part of a team in that, I hasten to add. But myself and Richard Curtis wanted to do something for me, a sitcom sort of format. And at the time, there was a very successful John Cleese situation comedy called Fawlty Towers, which I'm sure you've had here, and was tremendously successful. And we were terribly aware that whatever we thought up would be bound to be compared, probably unfavourably, with Fawlty Towers. So we decided to try to do something utterly different. And the starting point was not to set it in the present day at all, but to set it 400 years ago, 500 years ago, in 1485. And so that's how it came to be a period sitcom. It was just because we wanted not to be compared to anyone else. The first series was sort of high on originality,
yeah,
and high on cost. It was extremely expensive, but a bit low on easily accessible jokes. The head of the BBC at the time described it as interesting, but not many jokes per pound was how he described the budgetary fallout.
You also had a rather frightening haircut.
Yeah, it was awful, and it was a real haircut as well.
So you had to wear that. You had to wear that on the street.
Yeah, exactly. You had to go into shops and buy Mars bars. Wearing that hair, that wasn't pleasurable, but it was sort of striking. I mean, there's no doubt that the Blackadder, you know, was different. It was universally slated, lambasted in Britain for the first series when it was first shown. It was quite widely disliked, at least by the critics and the pundits.
What was their complaint?
I don't know, just not funny, you know, stupid, childish, you know, undergraduate, adolescent, the usual brickbats that get thrown at you, or have been thrown at me over the years. But in fact, it had quite a good audience. I mean, people, there was a modest but vociferous audience out there who really did enjoy it a lot. So it attracted enough interest to ensure that we were allowed to make the second series, which we did. And then I think, and that was when Ben Elton was brought in as a co-writer to Richard, who's a comedian, a well-known comedian in Great Britain, and he did tremendous work over the next three series.
You were in the movie The Tall Guy, and you played a rather obnoxious comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think I know what you're about to ask.
I'm tiptoeing towards the question here.
Right.
The movie was also written by your straight man.
Yeah,
was he getting back at you for something?
Well, I mean, I don't know, really. I mean, yes, in a way. I mean, he. I mean, not yes and no. I don't know. It is fairly allegorical, I hope. It is a gross exaggeration of one or two difficulties and conflicts which we might have experienced over the years. But I, you know, it's, you know, it's an exaggeration for comic effect is what I would claim anyway. And I think if you spoke to Richard Curtis, that he would, I hope he would confirm that.
Come in. Listen, Dexter, is there something troubling you? Something you want to talk to someone about?
Well, yeah, actually, as a matter of fact, there is.
Then for f***'s sake, talk to someone about it, will you? And sort it out before I suck you and hire a lobotomized monkey to play your role, okay?
Thank you, my friend.
How have you been able to develop and work on the sort of physical side of being a comedian? Because you sort of like your face. Mm. You use your body in a very malleable way.
Yeah.
You're very fidgety. And thinking about Mr. Bean, I mean, there are times you feel this very nervous energy. We watch you sort of fold in parts of your body.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, again, whether you work in front of a mirror.
I have no training, I should say, either in mime or in drama. I never went to drama school or acting school or any of these things, and I never trained in any visual medium.
Did you ever want to do that?
No, goodness me, no. Yeah. Sounds utterly dull to me, the idea of studying that sort of thing. I think drama school might have done me a lot more harm than good, to be honest. As is the case, I fear, with a lot of people. Some people blossom at drama school, you know, and they find that it focuses them. And a lot of people, I think their abilities are diluted and spread too thinly as a result of drama training. And I'm quite glad that I avoided it, actually.
Are you interested in being a quote-unquote serious actor or being an actor that does serious drama?
Well, yes-ish. I mean, I think what I do is acting more than it's anything else. Although I suppose I'm known as a comedian, it's not quite the right description. I think I am a comic actor who's got a bit of comedian in him. And if you are a comic actor, the job of acting is the same, in theory, whether you're doing comedy or something more serious. So I feel as though I've got the tools at my disposal to create a serious role. But at the same time, you've got to be fairly certain that you can do it well, I think. I don't feel the need to do it in order to, you know, explore some corner of my creative expression. I would only want to do it if I felt I could do it as well as anybody else. But if I did something that I can imagine, you know, God knows who, what examples I'm going to pluck out of the air, you know, Ian McKellen or Jeremy Irons or Jack Nicholson, if I felt that any of those people could play the part just as better than I could, then I think I'd rather they did it.
Well, I've enjoyed talking with you, and I thank you so much for joining us today.
That's okay. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Rowan Atkins' HBO special airs next month. This is Fresh Air.